welcome to the Valley. Today, I am your host, Janet Michael, and I am pretty excited to introduce my award-winning guest today. Louis O'Berry is here. He is the Energy Management Advisor for Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. And when you were here with me last in December, we did a fantastic show. You gave our listeners a ton of tips on how to save money on their electric bill. And apparently, the Virginia Association of Broadcasters thought you did an excellent job as well, because they gave us an award for your show.
Well, Janet, first off, I'm glad to be here, and that was obviously truly unexpected to hear that great news, but I'm glad to be back, and thanks for the invite.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully, you know, we took a picture, you're holding the trophy, so, you know, you've got proof, you should take it back and say, hey, whoever the powers that be, I need a raise, because I'm an award-winning radio show guest now.
Well, I'm sure that might help, but it's probably not how it works, but I'll take you back anyway and see what I can do.
But you're back today to talk a lot about more tips and maybe cover some of the things that we covered in that show, because it is summertime, and I know that I have noticed that while I haven't, you know, my electric bill's a little bit more. Did you do that? Did you try and make me,
I didn't personally do that, but we'll talk about some details that surround that. I mean, when I was here in the wintertime, we discussed a lot of items, kind of the hierarchy of things, if you will, that are using energy in your home and using the all-electric home as the example. If we look at that, I think we'll go through and see a bunch of details that will carry over to summertime. And then I'll explain some of the other details that surround the small
bill. And I have to say, we talked about this when you were here in December as well. I absolutely love the Smart Hub app. I think it is a fantastic tool on my phone that lets me see. I pulled it up in the lobby before we came in the air and was showing you my kilowatt usage, because it'll actually show me, and it color codes it. Green, I'm guessing, is, hey, I did good this day. I didn't use too much. Red is like, oh, whoa, what was going on that day? Right. So you can get a ton of information by using that Smart Hub app.
Well, Janet, Smart Hub was fairly new when I came to speak to you back before mm-hmm. Christmas time, and we've had a lot of time to take in a lot of information there, get some feedback from our members, and Smart Hub is a very useful tool overall. Like I said, it lets you look at your usage, you can report an outage, you can pay your bill, you can set notifications and benchmarks for particular days or particular hours that you're using energy, and it'll flag you and send you a text message and let you know that something's going on. So not only is it a tool to monitor day to day and pay your bill, but you can actually use it as a snapshot, if you will, and it'll come back and tell you, hey, I used more energy today or this particular hour. So if you have a system failure in your home, or you had company over and it kind of just jogged your memory that you had used a little bit extra power that day, it kind of helps bring things into perspective. So it really empowers our members to use their energy wisely, and to also, you know, use what they need, but also at the same time be mindful of what's going on in the home.
Well, and that's one of the things that we were talking about as we were looking through my particular usage, is summertime is typically a heavier energy usage time of year anyway.
It can be. It can be for some people. Obviously, in an all-electric home, your heating season is going to be the larger portion in relation to annual energy use. When we look at, I'll kind of go back over what we discussed last time. And remember, we were discussing the all-electric home and what appliances and systems mm-hmm. that are running in the background all the time or intermittently. And some are affected by the weather. Some are affected seasonally because you turn on something that you typically don't run at a certain time of year. So summer has its list of appliances that use energy, and you can actually have some other things in play there that essentially can use more energy. But, you know, first and foremost, in the all-electric home, HVAC, heating and cooling, referring to that as heating and cooling, are going to be the biggest part of your electric bill year-round, or the biggest part of your annual energy use. It's about 48% total, 42% of that being heating, but yet 6% is cooling. So it's not a big number, because remember, we're not cooling for a large period of time. We have shoulder months that, you know, in the fall, where we typically aren't heating and cooling as much.
And there are some times when you could just turn the air off and open the windows for a couple of days, and
exactly.
You get that little bit of a break.
Exactly. Now, obviously, on a day like today, when it's been raining or in the midst of summer, the outdoor humidity is a little bit high. So, you know, typically we like to try to counteract that with a little bit of air conditioning, so that we can, one, temper the space, and we can also help dehumidify the space. degrees. So with cooling still being only 6%, I know it sounds like not a big number, but in the grand scheme of things, in the summertime usage, if you mechanically cool your home, and that's either with a central system of any kind, window ACs, portable units, anything like that, you're still going to incur a significant amount more kilowatt hour usage from the air conditioning use. So it's still a pretty big portion of your bill. And it's obviously the most influenced by the weather. So temperatures, when they get up higher, and you can see that if you have your smart hub, and I'm sure you've seen that on your smart hub account. So days where you run the air conditioning, you see a direct relationship between the outside temperature and your usage. And that is merely your HVAC system running, or your window units, or however that you cool your home. That's just those systems cycling on and off. You got to remember the meter's looking at a cumulative amount of wattage used over a period of time. So it's capturing everything in the background and the course of things that are changing at any given point in time, like your air conditioning cycling.
Well, and we talked a little bit, too, before we came in about, you know, rates in the summer versus not. But one of the other things before we get to that, you mentioned cooling in general. There are things, pools, there are things that people have that they use in the summer that are going to cause you to use
Absolutely.
More energy. One of the things that I asked you about right before we went on the air was having things plugged into, like, power strips that are just normal. That do they use power? Do they use a lot in drain? And you mentioned game systems. In the summer, kids are typically home from school.
Right. So there's a lot of factors that will obviously impact usage, and everybody's usage is going to be a little bit different from home to home, family to family. With HVAC at the top of the list, obviously, water heating is still the biggest. We're talking all electric house. It's still 20% of your annual energy use. The water heater is still cycling, you know, throughout the day to maintain that water at whatever temperature that you have it at. Obviously, we recommend 120 degrees. We talked about that in the wintertime. But, you know, those things are always running in the background. You have refrigerator freezers running in the background. Some people like to run multiple units in the summertime. They have more people over. They like to keep more beverages cold. They might add a refrigerator freezer to the mix. And a lot of times those end up in the garage, or they end up somewhere
in
where
the
outside temperatures are influencing that. So energy use from those appliances will be a little bit more, if you will, in the garage than they would be located inside the conditioned space. Those refrigerator freezers are really only designed to be run inside conditioned space.
In more of a climate-controlled space.
In more of a climate-controlled environment. So, you know, HVAC is up there, and we'll talk about sealing your ducts and doing things to keep, you know, to keep the...
Changing your filters.
All those things that we hit on in the wintertime are still paramount in the summer. I mean, keeping up with your system is probably going to have the biggest impact on your bill than anything one in particular. But if you look at it, there are other things going on in the house. So outside of the typical refrigerator, freezer, or multiple units running, you've got your water heater, and then you've got your activity. Well, obviously, kids are home from school. There's more activity in and out of the house. Some people have pools and spas and things that they run during the summertime. Some run in the winter as well, as far as the hot tubs are concerned. But obviously, a pool pump is going to increase your base load. And when I say base load, that's everything that's outside of heating and cooling. So the part that you see in your smart hub account where the graph is going up typically, and you see an inherent change in your usage, that's typically related to space conditioning. But when you see a steady, like all of a sudden you see more, a little bit higher bar graphs than what you used to see, and that could be indicated if you had a pool and you turn that on, that's when you could see that change. Pool pumps use a significant amount of energy, and it just depends on the size of the motor. Some people that have in-ground pools have motors that are as large as, and using as much as 2,000 watts or so an hour, and some are a little bit smaller. So your typical above-ground pool with a 120-volt pump will probably use somewhere between 900 and maybe 1,000, maybe 1,100 watts. So if you take that and compound that over a 31-day billing cycle, it's easily a little over $100. So it's a big, you know, a big item that adds to usage. So, but for folks that don't have those pools and spas, there are other things. You know, it's humid in Virginia overall in the summertime. We have a lot of homes with basements and things like that. A lot of our members use dehumidifiers.
Yep.
And dehumidifiers, basically, remember, when we're air conditioning or we're conditioning our home, we're trying to counteract what Mother Nature's doing, correct?
Yes.
So if she had her way, it would be the same temperature and humidity inside as it would outside. So when you run a dehumidifier, you really can't beat Mother Nature, but you're making the space more favorable, and you're trying to keep that moisture content down, especially if you have a basement and most of it's below grade. So we recommend setting those, instead of running them continuous, if you must run a dehumidifier, run it somewhere between 50% and 60%. Typically 50% to 55% is going to keep you in a dew point range and a humidity level that's going to keep the moisture content down. Which
then in turn keeps your bill down.
That's right. Well, it's going to a degree, but running the dehumidifier is also going to incur the kilowatt hour usage. So most dehumidifier units, even if they're Energy Star rated, they're going to use between 500 and 600 watts usually for the typical 70 pint per day dehumidifier unit that you would go to Lowe's or Home Depot or Walmart or any big box store and buy.
Well, I tell you what, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this. I want to talk about rates in the summer versus not in the summer, and have you kind of explain this whole beat the peak thing to me.
Sure.
Because I hear it, but I'm not really sure that I'm doing it. So I want to make sure that I'm doing it and I'm doing it right.
We'll make sure we cover that well.
Awesome. So we're going to be back in just a few minutes. We're talking with Lewis O'Berry. He is an energy management advisor with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. I am Janet Michael, and you are listening to The Valley Today.
Expecting to hear a commercial? Well, that's kind of what this is. First, I want to thank you for listening to the Valley Today podcast. You're one of many who listen to the show this way. Sometimes it's because our listeners didn't know that if they're away from the radio, they can still listen on our website, via the TuneIn app on their phone, or even on Alexa. We're also available in the Apple Podcast app and the Google Play Music app. Sometimes our listeners are just busy and they want to listen when it fits their schedule. Or maybe it's a guest of the show who want to hear what they sounded like when they were on the radio. We even have a few binge listeners who listen to a week's worth at a time. So if you want those people, your potential customers, to hear your message, your ad could have been here. And the bonus, your commercial isn't restricted to just 30 or 60 seconds. You can take up to 2 minutes to talk to those customers. There's even the opportunity to be the exclusive sponsor of the Valley Today podcast, which gets you on-air mentions at the end of every show. If all of this sounds interesting to you, give me a call at the station, 540-635-4121, or send me an email to Janet@theriver953.com. You can also find all of my contact info by searching Janet Michael on our website at theriver953.com. So do one of those things. Get in touch and let me tell you how we can talk to those customers in this podcast every single day. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to The Valley Today. I am your host, Janet Michael. We are in the studio today with Lewis O'Berry. He is the Energy Management Advisor with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. He is my award-winning guest today. Thank you.
Thank you for letting me just let that one go.
Oh, are you kidding? They are so sick of hearing me talk about all of the awards that I came back from VAB with for the Valley Today show that, yeah, I'm just excited that now there's somebody here that can appreciate the glory that should be ours.
I'm happy that we got the trophy.
So that's really all that matters. It doesn't matter how we got there.
That's right.
So in the first segment, Lewis, we started talking about the Smart Hub. So first we want to recommend that anybody who is a Rappahannock Electric Cooperative customer, go get the app in the App Store. You can get access to it on your website to get more information
about
it.
It's available Apple, iOS, or Android. It'll work on either phone. You can just buy that in the Google Play Store or get that at the Google Play Store or download the app at,
in the App Store.
iOS form.
But then we were talking, so I learned a new phrase, something you taught me today. It's called seasonal base loading.
Seasonal base load. Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, the other things we discussed in the beginning of the show with heating, with cooling and water heating, those are always the hierarchy and they're at the top of the list, like we said. But there are some things that drive energy use in the summertime, and we hit it. We talked about people that have pools, the pumps running nonstop.
You know, dehumidifiers.
The best tip with that is to try to run the pool pump 6 to 8 hours a day versus 24 hours a day. Try to run it at night if you can, obviously. And try to limit and put timers on those devices so that you don't have to run the pumps 24/7, because that will help reduce your energy use in the summer if you do have a pool. We talked about dehumidifier setting at more of a nominal setting between 50 and 55% versus continuous, because that can add a significant amount of usage. And you also want to mitigate or take care of or fix, if you will, any issues that you have with water that could be, or moisture that's coming into the basement space. So if you've got runoff water that's affecting the home, you want to take care of that, because you just can't beat Mother Nature with just a dehumidifier. So you're expelling energy, you're using energy to try to make a space more desirable and favorable to be in. But if you have continuous sources that are negatively impacting that, if you will, you're going to have you're just not going to fix the problem that way. So it's good to address it that way. And obviously, you know, we know kids are home from school. There's more activity in the summertime. We're just generally busier. You know, our weekends are busy. We're doing stuff around the house. You know, you're running more fans. You're doing different stuff. But, you know, one small tip, you know, fans don't cool rooms. Generally, they cool people.
Yeah.
So,
I've learned that. You taught me that.
We talked about that in the wintertime. So you really don't want to run ceiling fans 24/7 if you're not in the room. It's not going to really have a huge impact. Now, I mean, if you don't run any air conditioning whatsoever at all seasonally, and you don't have air conditioning in your home, then sure, if you wanted to try to run a fan slowly or run a fan to help reduce some humidity, you can do that. But typically, most people condition their homes to some degree, and running the fan just really doesn't give you a positive energy benefit there. You're actually adding heat to the room from the heat that the motor's generating. So
I didn't even think about
that.
So
it's kind of a caveat there. So ways to keep the home cooler, you know, close the shades if you have shades or drapes on the west side of the home to prevent the solar gain from coming into the room so hard. It's still going to get in there slowly, but it does help the room mm-hmm. cool off faster. And
make sure your windows and stuff are sealed so that heat isn't trying to break in.
The same things that are very important in the wintertime, making sure your home is air sealed, making sure you're insulated well, making sure the ductwork from your HVAC system, if it's located in the attic space or in a crawl space or in an unconditioned basement, make sure that it's sealed, it's insulated. There's no issues with that that you could be losing energy, because those are the things that create that mechanism for infiltration, and basically you'll just have more heat trying to enter your home.
So we've got about a minute and a half before we have to take another break. Can you explain Beat the Peak to me in a minute and a half, or is it way more complicated than that?
You know, Beat the Peak, and I'm sure most of our members have been getting emails that are signed up for that. You get a video that talks about that. Beat the Peak basically is a way for us to reduce energy on the grid during certain times of the day. And what I mean by that, the peak is exactly what it means there. Basically, our power costs for the year are driven by our summer load. And basically, during certain times of the day, and we may send out a message where we're controlling devices that we have AC switches or current thermostats, smart thermostats that were from our pilot program, we have ability to curtail or control those. But the Beat the Peak video basically just gives our members a way to do it voluntarily. And that's shutting, you know, turning your AC up a few degrees, not cooking and using heat generation appliances, holding off on hot water. If you have a pool pump or dehumidifier or other appliance
devices
that's
like
using
that, yeah,
a significant amount of energy, you know, curtail that for a period of time that we designate that day. So usually it's going to be anywhere from an hour to 3 hours a day.
And it's usually when you get home from work in the afternoon, because everybody is coming home and jacking everything up. So
typically,
if you can just say, don't do that.
Typically in that 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. range. And we don't do that every day. It just depends on if it's predicted that we could hit that peak.
Awesome. Well, I tell you what, let's go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, can we run through a couple of tips, like what is a good temperature to keep your air conditioner set on, and again, your furnace? We talked about that a little bit. Filters are important from a maintenance perspective, and we'll kind of just run through a couple tips in the last second.
Absolutely. Sounds great, Janet.
Awesome. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We are talking with Lewis O'Berry. He is an energy management advisor with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative and an award-winning radio show guest, so I'm going to throw that in there one more time. I am Janet Michael, and you are listening to the Valley Today.
There's always more to the story. At the River 95.3, that's what our new podcast, Another Look, offers. A deeper look into the news stories you hear about every week. I'm Dylan Nichols, news director at the River 95.3. Join Janet Michael from the Valley Today and I as we review news from around our area, as well as some odd news stories from around the country. You can find Another Look on the river953.com and listen to the news, banter, and laughs whenever, wherever. Another Look, offering you a week in review with a twist, only on the river953.com.
Welcome back to the Valley Today. I am your host, Janet Michael, and this segment is brought to you by Valley Health Urgent Care. Can't wait to see a doctor? Now you don't have to. You can even check in online and save time at vhurgentcare.com. So we've got a couple of minutes left in the studio. We are talking with Lewis O'Berry. He is an energy management advisor with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. And we were talking during the break about when you were here in December, we did the actual show live, and then we continued our conversation after we were off the air because there was so much more to talk about. And I think we're going to do that again today.
I think that'd be great, Janet, because we can hone in a little bit on particular items that we discussed today and go into just a little bit more detail.
I can complain about my kid using his PlayStation 4 too much.
Sure, why not? We'll talk about that too.
And
you've been
rates,
burning me all afternoon
yes.
about that.
I'm going to give him grief because I want to say, look, this is how much more our electric bill is, and I have a professional that has told me that, and now I'm going to make him pay me back.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I know. It's really not going to work. But so talk to me a little bit about some things that we can do. So what is there an ideal temperature for somebody to set their air conditioner at during the summer?
Sure is. Just like we talked about in the wintertime, we talked about 68 for heating in the winter. We're going to talk 78 would be the maximum occupied temperature that we would recommend. So I know that sounds kind of warm to a lot of listeners. I don't, you know, a lot of people keep their home quite a bit cooler than 70.
Well, we talked about that in the last segment because I joked that I got a lot of feedback after we did that last show because I keep the heat set in my house at like 62 during the winter, and a lot of people thought that was insane.
Right, so you're an exception to the rule
there. I'm swapping the two because usually, I'll keep it warmer. Right now, we don't even have the air conditioner on. I managed to convince the husband to turn it off a couple of weeks ago when we got that nice break of warm weather and I've managed to kind of keep him at bay to turn it back on yet.
Well, you're doing pretty good. So folks that have central systems, we recommend 78 or higher when you're home. A lot of thermostats now have programmable features.
And does that work? Does that really help?
It does. Keeping it the same temperature all the time when you go to work or you're gone for a few days, it really doesn't pay to keep the house at, let's say you like 74 degrees realistically, and you keep the house at 74 when you're home. There's really no need to cool the house to 74 degrees if nobody's going to be occupying the home for a period of, 8, 10, 12 hours or so right there in the peak of the day. You're better off to use a programmable thermostat or individually or, manipulate the thermostat when you go to work and turn that up. Turn it up to at least maybe 4 to 6 degrees higher than what you typically keep the house.
And that doesn't undo the having it turned down lower during the day.
No, you don't add enough load to the home at that particular point. Yes, it's going to get gain in degrees, and that's what we feel. But at that point, 3 or 4 degrees, 5 degrees is not going to hurt you too bad at all. There's been a lot of studies done, and you can save about 10% a year overall heating and cooling if you do setbacks twice a day. And I do a setback once a day, and I see about maybe an 8 to 9% decrease in power use annually versus before I did that. So there is a benefit to doing keeping warmer temperatures as well as using a setback feature. Now, it's okay if the air conditioner is going to use what it uses, so there's no backup electric heat to be concerned with. I know people, when you turn the thermostat way up in the wintertime, if you don't have technology and the control to do that for
things
get a little crazy.
So that makes it a big deal. Awesome. So I tell you what, let's continue this conversation. I want to talk a little bit more in the break after the show on the podcast about other tips and things. So if you're listening right now, and give me about an hour and a half after we are done off the air, and you'll be able to listen to the entire podcast on our website at theriver953.com. But Lewis, thanks for coming to hang out with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me again, Janet. I look forward
to
it every time.
And I love that you have so much we have to do an extra piece after the show. So good for you.
Sounds good.
This is why you need a raise. You have been listening to The Valley today. We're chatting with Lewis O'Berry. He's an energy management advisor with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. Tomorrow is Tourism Tuesday, so I hope you will meet me back here in the studio for that. At 12:30, I will meet you back here for another episode of The Valley Today. Welcome back to The Valley Today after the show. It helps when you turn the mics on.
It does. It does.
Otherwise, we will be like, I hear them way, way far away, but I can't really make out what they're saying. We are still in the studio with Lewis O'Berry. He is an energy management advisor with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. You have probably listened to the show today and know that there was a ton of things that we didn't quite get to and things that I wanted to talk about in a little bit more detail, but we are sometimes limited in the amount of time that we have on the air. So, Lewis, I want to pick up kind of where we left off when we went, when we finished up the show, which was talking about tips and things like that. So you said that it does make sense to have a programmable thermostat that kind of cuts things down during the day when you're not there and can automatically adjust before you get home. Can I put one of those in myself? How does that work?
Well, it really depends on how savvy you are with electrical circuits and things like that.
Okay,
I would always recommend
put one in myself.
Right. I mean, our standpoint is always going to be that you recommend it to have that installed by an HVAC. A credentialed HVAC contractor. REC recommends that the contractor's licensed, bonded, and insured, and has, and typically, preferably, employs NATE certified technicians, and NATE stands for North American Technician Excellence, and that's a branding, if you will. It just means that the technician has taken some extra time and or the company has devoted a more rigorous training program and credentialing for their technicians.
So not necessarily an electrician, more so an HVAC person.
An HVAC provider. The general electrician does not typically get into controls and circuitry associated within the HVAC system. They're very good at connecting those appliances from the breaker panel to the actual, you know, and actually taking care of the branch circuit, but the actual machine itself and controls associated with it should be addressed by a qualified HVAC contractor.
Okay, well, that's good to know, because I would have thought, okay, it's something that's electrical, I'm going to call an electrician.
Exactly.
So it does make sense that it's
easy,
controlling.
Very easy to get those two confused, but typically the HVAC provider would be the correct selection.
Now, one of the things that I learned from my own experience is how important filters are.
Filters
because
are
we didn't change one year, and our AC system went completely crazy.
Sure.
We had a guy out who thought it was out of Freon. He put Freon in it, and then he thought that somebody else came and thought he had put too much Freon in it. And as it turned out, all it needed was a new filter.
Sounded like the coil was dirty, and the guy was onto something there when he told you that. So filters are important. If you have filters in your central system, and even window ACs have a little filter in the front where the inlet is right there at the coil, it's recommended to keep that clean, rinse that out. If you have a window unit, you know, open that up, or portable unit, clean that filter as well. But typically, the filters will vary location. Some are at the furnace or at fan coil.
And that's where ours is.
Some are actually installed right there at the wall, like in the studio here. There's a little 12 by 12 filter there in the ceiling. That's what a lot of homes have today. And we recommend a filter that's going to be, you know, you can use a pleated air filter, but as long as it's not too restrictive, because typically a residential duct system can't take what we call a lot of pressure drops. So if the filter is too restrictive, it's going to inherently make the fan work harder, make the compressor work harder.
Ah.
So you can hurt yourself getting those really high-end, certain, you know, I'm not going to be brand specific here,
right,
realistically, but any filter that has a higher rating than a MERV 8 is going to be pretty restrictive. So we recommend like a basic pleated air filter. I mean, the polys do okay, but they don't trap a lot of dirt. They're very loose, so they allow a lot of particulate through and things like that. So if air filtration is important to you, then I would recommend a pleated air filter somewhere in the neighborhood between 6 and 8 MERV rating. Just to kind of be a little brand specific in the beginning, when we go out on audits and walkthroughs, we selected a brand by 3M. It's called a Filtrite Basic. That's filter is falls.
I think that's what I get at Target.
That particular brand has a filter that falls within that range. There are many other brands that do. Just do your research and don't buy a filter that's actually too restrictive, unless your duct system can handle it. Most duct systems just aren't designed to handle those very restrictive
and especially
filters.
In older homes. So yeah, maybe some of the newer homes, if you've kind of upgraded your system. And you know, but
unfortunately,
for the most
part, that's not always the case. It really is. It really hinges on the duct system design and what it's capable of flowing.
So, how often should I change it? Is it like we used to just change it at the beginning of the summer when the air came on, and then changed it again at the beginning of winter when the furnace came on?
It depends on the type of filter. It depends on where it's located. Obviously, a filter up in the ceiling level in the ceiling column is not going to get as dirty as a filter that you walk by every day in your main hallway if it's down low. So, check it every 30 days, and if it needs changing, change it. If it doesn't, you can let it go a little longer. A lot of the pleated air filters can go, you know, 30 to 60 days or so. It really depends on the home.
And always get the right size, because I did that one time and tried to make it fit, and that wasn't good either, because I was just in a furnace, and there's only so much room.
You can get creative and trim them a little bit, but you have to put the end cap back on it. It takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, and that was a whole thing, and I'll never do that again. Thank you, though, because when you were here in December, you gave me a bunch of filters, so we were good to go, and they fit, and I thought, okay, see, I'm back in good graces with the filter fairy.
That's right.
But those are some of the things that I think people don't always think about, and doing those things also help. We mentioned earlier in the show about beat the peak. Maintaining those little things will help beat the peak too.
Sure. Anything you do to improve your home, whether it's with the building shell and reducing what we call infiltration or leakage into and out of the home, you know, you're making sure that your insulation is adequate. And I say adequate, I mean, most older homes are going to be anywhere between, and I'm speaking 60s, 70s construction and forward, you're going to see hopefully a minimum of 6 inches or more. If your insulation in the attic is not getting is well below the rafters at that point and the ceiling, that is a good indication that you just either the insulation has become depressed, you know, and settled over time, just not performing as well, and the effective R value isn't nearly what it was when it was installed. So, you know, anything well over 6 inches is going to stop about 90% of the heat transfer or heat loss out of the home. So even though you might have R19, you know, just adding insulation on top without air sealing is kind of not really a good approach, because there can be a diminished return there on your investment. So if you're going to spend a lot of money to do that, you have to be careful that you're not, you know, throwing good money after bad and take a very long time to see the energy benefit from that.
Well, so. And that's one of those things too, where, you know, we have an old house. It's a 1940s, 1950s ranch house.
Right.
So it probably is, you know, at the end of
right.
its life.
And
for
there's probably
most
places where there's no insulation. In,
yeah,
in
we have the
areas.
Old metal storm windows,
sure.
you know, all of that sort of thing. And
sure.
we probably think we're doing a good job now, but now that you're mentioning the attic, I could not tell you the last time. We've
right.
been in this house 14 years. I don't know that I've been in the attic 3 times, and now maybe I should go up there and look, because that 62 degrees
right.
that is still a little chilly could maybe be 64 if we were keeping the heat in the house.
Well, what we offer for our members is, you know, myself, as an energy advisor, I can come out and evaluate your home. We're also, we employ 2 energy management advisors. Both of us have credentialing. We're both BPI certified building analysts, so that, you know, that credentialing goes a long way in looking at your home and performing some tests there to make sure that it is up to snuff, for lack of better terms, but or needs improvement, or areas that you can reasonably improve for the dollar and actually see a return over a period of time. If not, there's also you can go on BPI's website, and you can find a weatherization contractor that's near you to come out and evaluate your home. Because just looking at the insulation isn't always
it's not going to give you all the answers.
Right, especially. And for the average homeowner, those are kind of areas where we're not typically as educated. Like, I have 20-plus years of HVAC experience, but if I didn't have that, then I would know no more than the average
yeah.
the average person.
You take a glance around,
industry.
Oh, yeah, the insulation looks good. It doesn't look like there are mice holes or anything in it,
exactly.
so we must be fine, and
so,
that may not be the
so
case.
So I would always advocate that you have a professional inspect those things for you and make sure that they're that it needs improving or it's an area that you're doing okay in, and there's other places that you can improve your energy
Well,
efficiency.
And I think it's awesome that you guys offer that to your customers. I mean, it doesn't cost me anything to call in and say, hey, you know, I heard this show on the radio. I'm not so sure that our
sure.
house is as efficient as it should be. Can you send somebody out?
Sure. We do usage analysis. We handle concerns with high usage and things of that nature, whether it be a phone call, whether it be a home visit. It just kind of depends on the circumstances there and what's needed. We also offer a more of a non-diagnostic approach. But, you know, with our experience, we can come through there and we can walk your home and identify things that you can do that are basically low-hanging fruit. And a lot of times you would be surprised. It's the things that have the biggest impact on your bill.
And you just don't think about it because you see them every day, or
exactly.
don't think it's really that big of
exactly.
a deal.
Exactly. You know, we eat, live, and breathe it every day. But, you know, we're welcome to come to your home and help you
That's
out.
That's interesting. So I want to go back one more time to Beat the Peak.
Sure.
So is Beat the Peak about lowering my electric bill personally, or is it about the greater good? I've never really understood how that actually works.
You hit the nail on the head with the greater good. You know, Beat the Peak kind of goes around. I talked about AC switches, AC switches that we have in place now that we actually can stop the unit from cycling. We do that in a 15-minute interval. It doesn't cause any excessive wear and tear to the system. We do have a criteria. If you do want one of those switches, it has to fall within a certain period of time. It has to be 15 years old or newer. So we do have some criteria for that, because, yes, older systems, we don't necessarily want to put those on because they're, you know, they can. They
yeah,
can,
I have one of those.
They can. They can tend to cycle it a little bit more than what and add a little bit of wear and tear there for an older unit. But typically, you know, they do well. And what we do, we cycle a 15-minute interval. So the entire period that we're in load control, the switch is activated. So it's a 15-minute on, 15-minute off cycle. And we stagger that, obviously, amongst all the units that we have switches installed on. So it's not a all-at-once thing, but we stagger that dispatch, if you will, to cycle those units during that period of time. So Beat the Peak as a whole are things that we're doing as the co-op, you know, at the co-op level and cycling off devices. devices. There's also some large businesses that participate and curtail some of their processes during that period of time. And obviously, you know, we incentivize for that. So with the AC switch program, residentially speaking.
Yeah, wasn't there like $25 or
there's
something?
There's a $25 yeah. credit at the end of the cooling season if you keep the switch all year. And then you get that $6 bill credit for the months that we're in curtailment, which are typically, you know, June through September, which is our summer months.
And I guess, you know, so basically I may see a small reduction in my bill just because it is reducing, but the greater good is that if you can use less energy, then you can buy it at a lower cost, which then
right.
will help keep my rates
right.
low. So, is it more expensive in the summer to heat or cool my house?
Well, it is now. It
okay.
is now. For years, we had a rate that was the same. Winter and summer, and now what we have what's called a summer rate and a non-summer rate, and obviously those took effect this year.
Okay.
Earlier in the year with the new winter rate, and obviously in June billing cycle, that's when the summer rates kicked in. So what you're paying per kilowatt hour in the summertime is reasonably more than what it was last year. Now, if you compound that over a 12-month average, you know, bills didn't go up a whole lot, but
I didn't
but they
notice,
will, right?
Yeah.
So, but generally speaking, you know, for every, you know, if you use 1,000 kilowatt hours, you know, you're going to see anywhere from a $10 to $12 increase. It just depends. I mean, it really depends on how much power you're using. So if you use a lot of power, let's say you have a pool and you have a larger home, or you have multiple mechanical systems, you've got a lot of things going on there.
You've got a couple of fridges in the garage.
Yeah, let's say you're using 3,000, 4,000 kilowatt hours in the summer on any summer month, you're going to see a substantial increase because last year, this period of time, you know, we were paying around 12 cents a kilowatt hour, and now it's a little over 13 cents as a whole. So it really depends on how much you use and to where you kind of fall in that cents per kilowatt hour. But really and truly, it's about 13 cents or so per kilowatt hour in the summer months, June through September. So, you know, you will see what I would encourage you to do would be to look at your actual bills, bring weather into the equation, look at what the weather patterns were this year compared to last year. Obviously, you know, if you had a lot of activity in your home or you made changes with your set points and things like that, they're going to have an impact on your kilowatt hours. But look at where your kilowatt hours were this time last year. Look at where they are now. So if you're only up 10%, but your bill was up substantially more dollars than what you think it would be, compare the two bills from last year to this year, and you'll see that in the breakdown, you'll see that where the rate change had an impact on that.
Okay, it wasn't just the kid at home
wasn't just him playing at home. So there was a rate increase, but you know, most of our members are cognizant of that now, and they're aware of the rate change. And obviously, we field questions on a daily basis about that still, but it's not a problem. We can if you have more questions regarding that, our member services representatives, our billing staff, in conjunction with myself and my counterpart, we can definitely field any questions that our members may have regarding
rates.
Well,
and that's one of those things too. As you know, a cooperative member, I've learned, not customer. I am a member.
That's right.
How about that? Everybody expects rate increases over the course of time for everything. My
sure.
car insurance goes up. My health insurance
sure.
goes up. You know, the water bill goes
sure.
up. So it's not unreasonable. And grand, you know, in the grand scheme of things, if you're telling me it may have gone from 12 even to 15 or 16 cents, it's still
That would be pretty drastic. That would be
so that would
big.
Like double my bill or something crazy.
That would be a pretty big increase. But like I said, we haven't had an increase in a very long time, over 20 years. So when we look at it from an operational standpoint, what it costs to maintain, remember REC, we're on the distribution side, so we maintain everything from the substation
to the house
or to the business, and then there's obviously a cost to do that. So we try to do that as effectively as we can, and keeping the rates as low as possible. But you know, it was deemed that a rate increase was needed to cover those costs.
And I didn't see a huge difference, but that's because I turned my air conditioner
sure.
off. And I will have to, I will point out, even though I should have done it when we were on the air so the millions of people could have heard, that you said that when you looked at my little kilowatt thing in the smart hub that I was doing better than you. But then you said that's because I don't have my air conditioner on.
Right. You weren't running, your air conditioning, and I run mine every day. So.
Yeah. Well, and mine is, I think the
Ours was installed in 1986. So ours is a really, really, really
old system. It's living on borrowed time, Janet.
It is totally living on borrowed time. You are not kidding.
All the HVAC contractors just heard that are listening now. So they'll be.
I'm going to have to call Ray and Tina at AirServe because this is the AirServe studio.
I see that. They'll be expecting a phone call promptly.
Yeah, I wonder if they would be willing to give me one and then I'll talk about it on the air on a regular basis.
Well, I don't know. You might take that up with them.
I know they're coming in one day this week to record new commercials. Right. I'm totally going to do that.
But all in all, there was a rate change. And there's basically the summer rate power costs are a little bit higher in the summer, and then they go back down in the wintertime.
So if somebody wants more information, aside from going and getting the Smart Hub app, that is a huge thing. Go and do that in the App Store, in the Google Play Store. You can get more information about what all's in it on your website at myrec.co.
Co-op.
I want to say coop, but it's co-op. Can they get in touch with you? What if somebody has, say, I have an energy question? What is the best?
Typically the process is that the member will call the 800 number or the local number, or they'll go into their local regional office. And if they have questions, the member service reps that are there can answer a large majority of those questions. But if they get more detailed and they have specific questions about whether it be a raid, whether it be a process within the cooperative or right of way or vegetation or energy, then those questions get fielded down the line to the experts that we employ to answer those questions, like myself in the energy side. So the main number would be the best place to start and engage with our member service reps, and they can definitely most likely answer the question, and then we can obviously move that down the line to somebody else if more detail is needed.
So totally unrelated to most of this, I follow you guys on Twitter. Are you the one doing the Tuesday trivia on Twitter?
Every now and then I'll contribute an answer or a question, but typically that's our public relations department, and they do a great job.
They do a fantastic job.
I give them
a
plenty amount of information, and they can just make it happen. Those folks are awesome.
Yeah, I retweet them a lot from the river, and they do a great job on Facebook and Twitter of posting pictures of the guys in the trucks fixing things, and just you guys are really involved in the community, and I think that's a huge thing,
too. Yeah, we talked about that in the wintertime when I kind of introduced a little bit about REC on the first show and what we're all about. So community involvement is definitely at the top of the list, engaging with our members, empowering them to have the tools and to have the resources to be able to live a good life, and then if they need anything, they know how to find us.
Well, and I have to say, given I'm assuming that you personally are not on Twitter, because the look of horror that just crossed your face when I started to say Twitter was like, no, that's not me. I don't know anything about that.
I guess I'm one of the minority, but I am not a social media at the personal level. I don't engage in social media, so
what?
I'm just one of those people in the Stone Age.
Such a good thing you didn't tell me that before we went on the air, because that would have been as much as I gave you grief about being nervous last time, I totally would have locked on to that social media thing. So smart on your part.
But REC does communicate through those channels.
Oh, they do. It's great. They answer tweets. They'll like things. I mean, they're very interactive. So I will give them solid props for that. So, is there anything that we didn't cover on your list? I think we got to everything on mine.
I think we're in good shape. If anybody has any questions, obviously they can contact REC, either through Smart Hub, through the phone or through
the website.
Email.
And I'll put all that up on the podcast page so people can click through. But thanks for sticking around even after the show and talking with me a little bit more.
Thanks for having me.
We're
going to
put this in for an award next year, and then you can be a two-time award.
Well, they probably won't do that for you twice.
I'll find a different category. I'll fudge it a little bit and figure out a way. Yeah.
I see.
Well, we're going to wrap up our after the show with Louis O'Berry. He is the Energy Management Advisor with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. And again, thank you for coming and doing the show and then for hanging out a little bit afterwards.
Thanks again. I thoroughly enjoyed it as usual.
Absolutely. So we hope you enjoyed the show and listened to the whole thing. And we'll be back on the air tomorrow at 12:30 as scheduled.